Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
All right, welcome everybody to a brand new wonderful week, last week of August, I think.
Yeah.
And this is the Chuck and Julie Show, True Straight Up. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden brought to you
by AmericanCitizenPress.com. Great website for conservative voices. They carry a lot of Tom Tancredo articles, too. He's been really busy writing for them.
He's been doing a great job.
Also, Dr. Julie McCallum with Denver Cynogenics, a great doctor, keeping Chuck alive, doing all kinds of great work for our family. Can't say enough good things about her. Well, if you guys, we're going to talk about a lot of things coming up. We've got Dan Eberhardt. If you've listened to us for a while, we used to have him on when we were at 710 KNUS. He is an energy CEO, head of Canary
equipment
here in Denver, flies around with President Trump. So we'll see if he has, if we get him, if he has any secret insight into what's going on with Trump. But you'll be glad to know that the Biden administration and Jen Psaki said there are no Americans stranded in Kabul. And in fact, in all of Afghanistan, no Americans stranded.
But also,
now, there are some Americans who are hiding in fear in their homes, worried that the Taliban is going to knock on the door any moment and kill them. There are some Americans who, in spite of the president saying, hey, just get yourself to the airport, everything will be okay, can't get to the airport. But she said it is irresponsible to say that they are stranded. Just so you know, we'll bring you up to date on that, too. The Defense Department being really weaselly, and I got to wonder why, in terms of releasing the number of Americans, I mean, even a ballpark number of people they think that have been evacuated and that they think...
Probably because it's not a very large number, though, is my guess, or maybe they actually don't know.
Yeah, maybe who knows. But we'll get
they're just weasels. So.
We'll get to all of that, and then you'll be glad to know also that the vaccine has been approved by Pfizer. We'll talk all about that. But first we have with us Dan Eberhardt. As I said, he's an energy CEO, political commentator, been on all kinds of programs, including the Chuck and Julie Show. Dan, it's been a while, but it's good to talk to you again. Good afternoon, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, no. So let me just jump out. We got so much to talk about, but in terms of energy, I was trying to look up the lowest gas prices under Trump, and I couldn't really find it, but I remember with my little King Super card, there were times when I was paying like roughly $1.50, right? I mean, it was a
stunt.
After the deduction with the King Super's discount, right? But I mean, it was, which I work hard to get, which was astonishing. Well, it was astonishing. And now you fill your gas tank up and you just look at it and you're like, I'm not filling up, you know, a super tanker or something like that. Can you maybe help us kind of compare and contrast energy prices that hit us, right, under Trump and what's going on with President Biden now?
Sure. So oil is maybe about 60 or 70% higher than it was, kind of February 2020 before COVID hit. And I think it's because of Biden's policies. Look, we've got, he paused drilling on oil and gas drilling on federal land. He canceled permits for the Keystone XL and several other pipelines. He's damaged investor sentiment with oil and gas projects offshore. Plus all this kind of Green New Deal light stuff that's in the stimulus plan and the infrastructure plan. And these policies, you know, Green New Deal equals higher energy costs for consumers. Mm-hmm. And we're just seeing a little taste of that. You know, we're only 6 months into the Biden administration, so I think it's going to get worse for consumers.
Well,
and it was nice that he greenlit the Russian pipeline to Germany for oil and for gas, which
was canceled.
Great. So we're glad that he's getting the gas prices down and benefiting Germany and Russia while at the same time sticking it to us.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff doesn't make any sense, right? He cancels the Keystone XL pipeline, but is okay with the Nord Stream 2 pipeline in Europe to help Russia. And he said, 2 weeks ago, he said that OPEC should drill more oil. And I literally about blew a gasket. I'm like, why can't we drill more oil here? Like, he literally said OPEC should drill more oil. He didn't say Texas or North Dakota or Pennsylvania should drill more. And I found that so upsetting. It's like, whose team is this guy on?
Yeah, well, good question. And moreover, OPEC said, stick it.
Yeah, OPEC was like, oh, sure, Joe, happy to help you with your poll numbers.
Stick it,
yeah.
Joe. Amazing.
I mean, do you see that going?
No, it's absolutely nuts. But his policies are anti-consumer and anti-American oil and gas, as best I can tell.
Right.
Let me ask you this, and I think all of us out here know pretty well how it's affecting us. And I keep reading Xcel here in Colorado. You know, utility rates going to go up because of various new Green Deal things that they have going on.
But we also have a governor here in Colorado who is anti-oil and gas.
Anti-fracking.
And so, fracking. So how's that affecting your company and others here in the Denver area?
Well, it's definitely affecting it. So we're in Grand Junction and Sterling and Rifle are parts of Colorado we operate in. And, you know, all of these things make it a little bit more difficult. And they make us focus a little bit less on Colorado and a little bit more on states like North Dakota and sure. Texas to drill because Colorado has become so anti-oil and gas.
Right.
Talk about, you said, you know, you expect it to get worse. And I imagine you're right. I mean, if Biden's plan is to simply beg OPEC to cut prices, again, so the poll numbers go up. I imagine that once the poll numbers go up and the election is, the midterms are over, he'll, like, you know, do more awful things to us. But, I mean, where do you see that going, and how easy is it to turn around?
Well, I do think Biden is under increasing pressure as energy costs rise to do something. But so far, when he does something, and I'm using air quotes here, it really has the opposite effect and isn't helpful. But I think the administration is going to come under increasing pressure as energy costs for consumers go up. But I think that Biden is basically boxed in by the progressives.
Yeah.
And so he's trying to appease the progressives with this kind of what I call Green New Deal light, you know, which is the green strings that are in the infrastructure package, that are in the $1.9 trillion stimulus plan. And all these restrictions, but these restrictions make costs for folks like me and my company go up, which means energy costs are going to go up for consumers.
Sure.
Well, and that's not just, talk to us a little bit about, if you can, about the supply chain, or I guess what I call the supply chain. So it's one thing at the gas pump, we see it, right? I mean, that's directly related, I guess, to crude oil and prices. But then, if it costs me more to fill up my gas tank, well, then it costs the truckers
FedEx and Amazon,
for Pete's sakes. I mean that has a rising cost across the board, right?
Yeah.
Well, it costs everybody more money. Look, if we can't have pipelines, the oil goes in the train. If the oil's on the train, the oil is going to push stuff that ends up in Walmart and Target from the train to a truck. So it creates more traffic, more pollution, and that's the way the system works. You know, the pipelines are the most efficient and safest way to deliver energy, to deliver oil and gas. And then we've got in all these bills, they keep putting in these kind of subsidies to help green energy and then restrictions for oil and gas. And for me, we all want to be carbon neutral. We all want to help the environment. You know, I want clean water and clean air as much as the next person. I think we've got to balance it with the jobs it will cost. I think we've got to balance it with, you know, Biden wants all this stuff, but it's aspirational and the technologies aren't ready yet to bear the load of what consumers need in terms of energy every day to get to work, to heat and cool a home, and to move on down the road in factories and with the rest of the economy.
Well, as a practical matter, the United States adds about 10% to the total carbon footprint of the world, or even a little less than that. And it's our carbon footprint has been significantly decreasing because of natural gas. And less, I guess, coal, but more because of natural gas. China, however, is building coal plants every day. And so Joe Biden, if we cut back, let's say, 30%, you know, that's 1% or 2%, you know, that's nothing. And at the same time, China is merrily building coal plants. So, you know, an aspiration to what? For our bankruptcy and China's eventual rise and dominance in the world?
It's just spin.
Yeah, the Paris Climate Accords were a total sham in that the emerging markets didn't have to participate, and particularly China, which, you know, again, air quotes, claims itself to be an emerging market, but it's also a wealthy nation with considerable scale. And they are greedily using coal-fired power plants and coal mines to, you know, rapidly climb up the economic chain with no real concern for the environment whatsoever. Right. And they're doing that while Europe and the U.S. are becoming more efficient and caring about the environment. And the two don't really correlate. And I think that we as a globe are destined to fail if we don't get China to participate with the U.S. and Europe on these environmental strings, environmental regulations to produce cleaner air.
We're talking with Dan Eberhardt. He's the CEO of Canary. Is it Canary Equipment? I always get the name wrong. Canary, what's the rest of Canary's?
Just Canary is fine.
Okay, just Canary.
And political commentator, energy expert.
And also, back in the halcyon days, you were flying on Air Force One occasionally, weren't you?
You guys are like this, you and Trump.
I have been a couple of times, yes.
We're going to pick your brain about Trump here in a second, but I did have a question. So when Donald Trump was president, he was talking to guys like you, guys who were in the energy industry. He understood business. He was asking, okay, well, if I do this, I mean, I think I'm right here, right? If I do this, if I do that, what are the implications? Who is Joe Biden talking to?
Well, he's certainly not talking to the industry. I think he's talking to solar and wind and environmental activists that are trying to make it harder for oil and gas companies and, you know, don't care that much about the energy costs for consumers.
Right. Well, you know, and here's the thing that's a scam. I was talking to somebody. So, you know, the wind energy and the turbines are a big deal. And I was talking to somebody who was saying up in Weld County, I mean, these are the giant turbines. And like anything, they don't last forever, right? There's apparently in Weld County a giant wind turbine blade graveyard, right? I mean, are you aware of this too? Where it's just laying there, let alone the birds that it affects when they're playing. But I mean,
killing zone.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like, have you heard about that?
Yeah, no, they basically were out, and we're not really good at how to dispose of those yet. And look, these turbines and these windmill farms, especially when they're in the migratory path, kill just an awful lot of birds, which is a tragic thing. And we need some kind of technological fix to stop that from happening, certainly.
Right.
Or wipe out birds.
Well, in the meantime, though, I mean, you got companies like Xcel. They don't really care that they're saying we'll crack down on some of the fossil fuels that we've been using because they're going to get incentives. They pass the cost along to us. And I would submit, and tell me if you disagree, but you know, the Democrat Party, you know, say, oh, we stand up for the little guy. These are policies that directly hurt the most, I think, the people who can least afford it. When gas prices go up, when you've got to commute, when you can't work from home because you're not like an elite person, all of these things, and your home gas price goes up or heating price goes up, all of that, I think, is hurting the people that Biden wants to help the most, don't you think?
Yeah.
Or he says he wants to help the most.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Look, Joe Biden is talking out of both sides of his mouth here because if he really wanted to help consumers, and you are right, the people at the lower end of the income chain spend a disproportionate amount of their money on energy to move, so, you know, cars, subways, whatever, and to fly, and then energy to heat their homes. Those are the people that are consistently and increasingly hurt by all these subsidies that are provided for electric cars, these subsidies that are provided for energy, for these Green New Deal activities like the wind farms, the solar power, the solar plants, and these other kind of supposedly clean-burning fuels. You know, every one of those strings hurts a lower-income American.
Right.
Now, Dan, I know you're an active contributor to the RNC. Do you do much, if anything, in Colorado politics?
No, I do a little bit. I was a big fan of Cory Gardner and really hated to see him lose, and I thought that was very bad for the Republican Party in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And I am, you know, interested in, you know, trying to help figure out how we can get someone to win statewide there.
Okay. We, as you know, probably are not the biggest Cory Gardner fans, but still, we'd like to get a Republican in there. Well, let me ask you this. Now, do you talk to Donald Trump? Do you have any sense what's going on in his world?
What was your score in your last game with him down in
Well, no, I do from time to time, and definitely have in the past. Like, I think he's you know, not liking being on the outside of the ring and really wants back in. He is going to be very relevant in the 2022 midterms.
Okay. Well, and let me just a final, and this is going to be an open-ended question, at least from me, because you know so much about this. You know, let me just ask you, is there anything about this whole energy, the Biden policies, what's going on, that you just think it's really important that maybe people don't realize that they need to realize?
Well, first of all, I think Joe Biden was completely off his rocker when he called for OPEC to increase production. He should have called for American oil and gas to increase production. Again, it boggles my mind how he wants to have this, you know, pipeline to help Russia, Nord Stream 2, and doesn't want to have the Keystone XL pipeline. Then he wants to OPEC to increase production, and he doesn't mention that the U.S. should increase production. It really makes me wonder whose team he's on. And then again, every time you hear Green New Deal and expansion of these strings in all these big government programs, think about what that does to energy costs for consumers and how that hurts the American economy.
All right.
Well, if you want something to help a candidate in Colorado win statewide, I think the somebody with the Independence Institute or someone else ought to come up with a campaign to get rid of ballot harvesting. Because as long as that occurs, Denver and its unbelievable amount of what I consider tainted votes will.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. That's a stain on democracy and really slows us down.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, Dan, hey, thank you. It's
great
nice to talk to you again.
And go Commodores.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Go Commodores. All right. Yeah. No. Thank you for having me back. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, thank you there. Dan Eberhardt, Energy CEO. You can read some of his stuff in Real Clear Politics, mm-hmm. things like that. Dan, thank you for your time. Well, we want to talk then. Now we can switch to another topic where Joe Biden is just doing great. And why don't you know, here we'll go ahead and open up the phones or the Zoom calls, 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. Or if you're there on Zoom, you want to go ahead and do a chat, you can do that. Or if you want to unmute yourself and comment, you can do that too. So Joe Biden over the weekend held yet another news conference. I guess he's like, by God, I'm going to keep holding news conferences.
Until one works.
It's like,
speeches. I'll go on there, whatever it takes. And one of these, someone will come, well, that wasn't too bad.
I mean, maybe. I don't know who was advising him. You should just knock it off. So we had one Sunday and yesterday, and he said
he had one today.
And he had another one today. That was about the vaccine. We'll get to that in a second, too.
Yeah.
But he said that, okay, actually, I never said it was going to be painless to get out of the airport. I mean, who wants to hear that? He said, it is going to be very hard and extremely difficult.
Especially if I move all the troops out first.
That exactly.
Yeah, will be very painful.
There was a shootout outside the airport in Kabul.
As happens
today.
In these Western areas.
I mean, it's just kind of be a nightmare. And then Biden said, okay, granted, since, according to Jen Psaki, no Americans are stranded, but we don't want to leave any of the Americans who are vacationing there. Yeah. I read somebody tweeting, and they're having seafood buffets.
I suppose if they're killed, they're not stranded. So they can get rid of that problem.
You know, I mean, it's ridiculous what he's doing there. But he said, he was asked, because, I mean, when you look at it, August 31st is 8 days away. That's like next Tuesday. Right. And the Afghan or the Taliban says, hey, we got a deal, guys. You said you'd be gone by then. And Joe Biden was like, well, we may have to ask him for more time. Don't want to go there yet. Now I'm thinking to myself, when are you thinking of calling him? Like, I don't know, Monday night? Or, I mean, is he aware there's a time difference? I mean, I'm hoping that doesn't get screwed up. Right. They're like, oh, we forgot they were ahead of us. But I want to play. So Biden said, you know, we may have to ask for more time. Today at a Pentagon news conference, they said, well, we haven't decided yet. We don't know yet. We're hoping we can get it done early, but we may not be able to get everyone out.
What do you bet they're shoveling the Taliban incredible amounts of money?
Oh, huge amounts of money. Yeah. But here is what the Taliban had to say.
For maintenance and all the equipment.
The Taliban does not consider this a flexible deadline. Thomas, if we could play the Taliban on withdrawal site. This is a soundbite with the Taliban spokesman, Dr. Shaleen. If we could play that, please.
Dr. Shaleen. It's like Dr. Joe Biden.
Yeah.
or the UK, wanted to extend the 31st of August deadline in order to continue evacuations out of the country. Would you agree to that?
No, no.
Why not?
This is something, you can say it's a red line. President Biden announced this agreement that until 31st of August, they would withdraw all their military forces. So if they extend it, that means they are extending occupation, while there is no need for that. I think that it will deteriorate the relation, that will create mistrust between us. If they are intent on continuing the occupation, so it will provoke a reaction.
And you get
provoke a reaction.
Well, you get the feeling that, unlike Obama, when the Taliban set a red line, they mean it.
Yeah. Well, and you got to wonder, here's what I'm kind of wondering. And again, if you want to weigh in, 888-627-6008, I wonder if that's actually what's going on, where the Taliban is playing nice now, knowing full well that there's no way the Americans are going to get out on the 31st. And then on the 31st, I mean, you heard the words he used, you're occupying. I mean, they look at the Americans there, not as rescuers, not as good people, not as saviors. They look at them as an occupying force. And he said, you know, you've got till August 31st to get your occupying force out of here. If you don't, then that will provoke a reaction. Now, let's keep in mind, so how would that reaction play out? So you've got all of the Americans and the troops in this little enclosed airport surrounded by the Taliban, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, you name it, the terrorist organizations that they're right now.
Your standard good quality terrorist organizations.
Who, if they weren't well-armed before, are certainly well-armed now because they've given them all. So I would be very concerned about the reaction. And I'm just wondering if in the Taliban mind, they're like, okay, well, we gave them the 31st. We're going to give them to the 31st, right? We're not going to make it easy on them.
And after that, it's a slaughter fest.
And after, exactly. And this is from Sandra. Wasn't he one of the Gitmo prisoners that Obama traded for that trade?
I'm not sure he was. I know there's one guy with a K, and I can't remember. It's a long polysyllabic name, but I'm not sure if Dr. Soleimani was or not.
I don't know. But Sandra, you're right. Once again, great policies. They release the very people who are now, you know,
paying them $4 billion.
Right. And this is from Jacob. I heard that the jet fuel used to get Americans out of Afghanistan is being bought from the Taliban.
Well, they probably gave them a better price than they would get in the United States.
I mean, everything is being, not everything, but is being bought from the Taliban. You look at the humanitarian crisis.
Where are they getting food?
Well, they're trying to bring it in, but they've had to have some of the charity organizations and the emergency organizations can't land because they're concerned about that. So, you know, you've got people there who are, it's, you know, summertime, it's hot. They've got all kinds of problems there.
Summertime in Afghanistan.
Yeah. And in the meantime, Joe Biden is like, well, we hope we'll get out today. So then at least the media seems to have woken up from their long slumber
a little bit.
So then they were asking the legitimate question. Okay. So if we need to get every American out by August 31st.
You got 8 days.
Right, you got 8 days. So how many people a day is that? And in order to figure that out, you need to figure out, well, how many Americans are there? They seem to, number one, not have a clue. And although they said today that they have flown out, they've evacuated 37,000 people. When asked, well, how many of those people are Americans, they either couldn't say,
wouldn't say,
and refused to say. And if we could put in the reporter, I'll give it.
Well,
hey,
here's what I've got a possible solution for the Biden administration.
Okay.
As of August 31st, if you haven't gotten out, you're just not an American anymore. Sorry.
There you go.
You're just not an American anymore.
There you go.
It's kind of hard luck, but
your citizenship
that's the way
is revoked. Well, yeah. Well, what they're going to try to do, they're going to try to say, well, everyone who wanted to get out.
Yeah, you didn't want to get out enough.
You didn't
make it past all the blockades and all the gun runners and everyone else. You just didn't try hard.
You aren't motivated. But if we could play, this is a great exchange. Thomas, if we could play the Defense Department soundbite, listen to the reporter. And this is the Pentagon spokesman, Mr. Kirby.
Mr. Kirby, Admiral Kirby.
John, were you being deliberately vague when you said the number of Americans was several thousand, or was it because you're not sure of the number? If you need to check the number, I mean, that's the most important number here, the number of Americans. So if it's just a matter of checking the number, can you do that and give it to us? Or if you're being deliberately vague, don't tell me why you're being deliberately vague.
I think I'm just going to leave it at several thousand right now, Dave.
Well, then tell us why.
Because I think the number is very fluid, and it literally changes nearly by the hour.
It's not more fluid than these 11,000, 37,000.
I'm going to leave it at several thousand right now. Waffa.
And good for the reporter. What do you mean fluid? Well, you could figure out that there were 37,000 have been evacuated, right? It's like it's fluid. You know, this is my guess. My guess is it's very low. My guess is that, number one, they were in, I mean, you know, you had those thousands of people from Afghanistan just flood the airport.
Yes.
And again, I don't really blame them. It's just the longing that bothers me. And again, the fact that they created a whole situation to begin with. But they had to do something with those people, right? The Taliban wasn't really letting them.
Well, they, you know, they gave out blank visas. And so they're reproduced. So everybody there came out with
although they
visa.
Flew out. One guy I saw who was on the no-fly list. He was a terrorist on the no-fly list. He was evacuated somewhere in Europe. So
well, I hope he has a good time in Germany.
It didn't say whether they tried to send him back or what. But I
Sweden
think, though, my guess would be that it's just not very many. I mean, earlier you were seeing they were having these planes full of hundreds and hundreds of people, and there'd be like 200 Americans, right, who had been evacuated so far.
So let's say you were on the special forces of Afghanistan, or you were an interpreter for Afghanistan, and you're not going to go to the airport. You're going to the goddamn airport and do whatever you can do to get you and your family out, because you know you're going to be slaughtered. So you'll risk an enormous amount. So those people out there are people who risk everything because they'll know they'll be killed. Now, the Americans have some vague feeling that the Taliban probably wouldn't slaughter most of them. And so it's not going to risk as much. It's going to wait until, and it's been instructed, wait until you get the instructions to go to 21st and Maple, and we'll picking everybody up there. So.
But I was reading, even the Ukrainian military force there was, and I don't know if this is true, but this is what I saw, was, you know, helping get their people out, right?
Oh, sure.
You know, and on the one hand, I understand, you know, the thought that, okay, so if you have American troops go out and try to rescue people, because it sounds like they're not thinking about that anymore. Earlier, Biden was like, we're going to explore every option, but they're not, they seem to be explored. And I guess the thought being, well, if they were to do that, then it would be like, I saw somebody's like Mogadishu, where the Taliban would, you know, attack them. But they're not doing that to the other forces. They're not doing that to the British. They're not doing that to the French. They're not doing that to Ukrainians.
Maybe the British and all those are paying him more. I don't know.
I don't know. But it does seem to me, I suspect, and again, time will tell, but that the Taliban is setting Joe Biden up. Because
that could be one of the great, I don't think that's true, but it could be. Jack indicates once the Taliban use a few mortars on the runway at Kabul, no one is getting out, including the U.S. soldiers. That's absolutely right.
That's what I'm saying, Jack. And I'm wondering if in their Taliban mind, they're thinking, hey, look, we had a deal till August 31st. We'll wait till August 31st. Then the deals. And then after that, they are, you heard his words, an occupying force. And so we'll do everything we can. And that, you know, then that will provoke a reaction. He didn't say we'll start diplomatic negotiations. He said that will provoke a reaction. So I think this is a situation that is bad. I mean, I think and I guess if it provokes a reaction, does that mean then they start going door to door? I mean, I'm sure they know where the Americans are.
No, they probably don't. But I'm sure that they know where some of the Americans are. And some of the Americans are figuring out places to go where they don't know they're at. And
right.
And it must be a slightly nerve-wracking experience if you're...
You know, and this from Jack, the Biden government that won't even bother to save Americans in Afghanistan claims everyone should take the vaccines because the government cares about saving lives. And also, Jacob pointed out, I saw pictures of this too, the jets have to drop flares when they land, which will sort of deter heat-seeking missiles because they're worried about that. I mean, that's all it would take would be one, and they shoot down one of those jets, or like he says, a few mortars on the runway. I don't know. This situation is...
But we got a good deal because we're going to be getting tens of thousands of Afghanis, some which probably will settle in quite well in America, some which will not, some whose children may not. They are almost all Muslim. They're not quite the radical version, or they wouldn't support the government, but nonetheless. And that's why the Democrats always think it's a victory, because as long as we can get another 50, 75, 100,000 people, and that maybe voting for Democrats is party time.
I think it's clear the Democrats, I say this all the time on the show, the Democrats don't care about us. They only care about power. Their own power and their own and making more money. That's all they care about.
Terrible people.
Well, speaking about the vaccine, I'm sure everybody heard this. So this, I have to laugh. So the FDA, hooray, okayed the Pfizer vaccine and booster. So let's go over this a little bit. Number one, it's not a vaccine, okay? It's not a vaccine. It's an experimental gene therapy.
Yeah.
Is what it is. So let's be careful. RNA. Let's be careful about that. Number two, raise your hand if you think the FDA was going to be like, we probably shouldn't have been using that Pfizer vaccine. I mean, give me a break. They could have, the floor could be littered with dead animal, laboratory animals. Like, they'd be shoveling them out in wheelbarrows. And they'd be like, no, they're fine. They died of something else. I mean, did anyone for a second trust the FDA is going to tell us the truth about this? Keeping in mind, of course, that Pfizer has no liability. Even if it's true, right? So. Oh well, darn. I guess that FDA, the FDA should not have approved that. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And then let's go back to Michael Tao. We had him on, was saying they approved it based on what? I mean, it's only been around for a few months, so they have no idea what longer term. All they know is that not everyone dropped dead immediately from it, right? They have no idea about long term effects. They canceled the control group in the study, right? They were doing the study, and they're like, eh. Well, we're just going to forget about that. So there is no really research that's been done on this. I mean, it's just a joke. And so I was reading all this stuff, and you know, let us know if you think this, that there are going to be mandates now. I think there are. I think they're going to turn around and say, are going to try at any rate, hey, the vaccine has been proven safe, so now everyone is required to get the safe vaccine because the FDA gave it a thumbs up.
Even
right?
If it kills
you.
You're better off if it kills you, because then you just won't be a potential source of the COVID. So it'll be good for everybody.
Well, and this is from Jacob here too. The process for FDA approval comes from the drug companies themselves.
Right.
And then Dr. Donna, FDA has pulled things they approved at one time, leading one to question, what does it matter if they approve something? Well, you have that, but I also think though, can you imagine I've seen your Joe Biden's FDA? And we've been shoving this vaccine down everyone's throat. You're not going to turn around and say, you know, we've actually seen a few questions about this. And so, and they're going to turn around and say, oh, well, you have to get the vaccine.
I trust them.
Yeah. Fortunately, though, there's a Rasmussen poll out today. Here, this has just come out. This is amazing. So it was, it interviewed Democrats, Republicans, and independents, and it was more skewed towards independents. And it said 52%, the question was, do you think the government is lying to you about the vaccines being safe? 52% of the people said yes. Not that, like, I have some questions about it. They said, yes, I think the government is lying to me about vaccines. And that included about a quarter of the Democrat respondents, most of the Republican respondents, and then also about a third of the independent respondents. I don't know, Chuck. I don't think that this FDA approval of the vaccine, I mean, everyone's like, oh, now everyone's going to go rush to get the vaccine. Even Trump got booed at the rally, right?
When he said, go get the vaccine. Boo. That was great.
And the biggest thing that confuses me, I know why they do it, is this complete ignoring of any kind of talk of natural immunity. And the complete ignoring of, why do we have to be mandated to take a vaccine that 99.5% of the people who get the virus survive? And the people who don't are in a very specific, for the most part, category. I mean, it's unnecessary. And you got to wonder, why are they shoving this vaccine down our throat so much, you know?
Absolutely. The Hill-Harris Expo, which is always has the highest rating for President Biden, just came out, and they showed it 49%, dropped 6 points from 55 to 49. So when Harris Expo comes out and it shows 49, that approval rating is going to continue to drop.
Well, yeah, I saw there's another poll at CBS. They have a poll that says most people, the majority of people, believe Biden is incompetent. An AP poll has him down, this is AP, 12% from 66 to 54. So although they still have him above water, so to speak, it's down 12 points. That's from July, okay? And I think as this fallout from Afghanistan continues, this from Dr. Donna, the main reason it's being said is it's approved is to force it. Yes, one of the things the military has going for it to refuse it was still not a approved. That will make things more difficult, although not impossible. And Dr. Don, you're right, the natural immunity for most is for life. Jacob is saying, I did not check this out, but I was told that Denver Health and Hospitals is losing a third of the staff because of the mandatory vaccine. I don't know about that. I can tell you this, Jacob, though I have talked to nurses and have friends in the health industry there, and they're saying there is a growing move by people to who want to refuse to take it. We had the folks from a woman, well, I think whose husband worked at the Denver Police Department, where they said roughly a third of the Denver police officers, no, 57% had not received the vaccine. 72% basically said they would quit rather than be forced to take the vaccine.
Well, it's a practical matter. For what about all those people who got it early and now are being told,
you have to have a booster.
You got to get a booster. And you go, well, how long will the booster last? A day.
Well, yeah. Well, and if the fact is, I guess here's my question too, and maybe Dr. Donna, if you know, if you can read this, but okay, so you get the vaccine, and then you don't get sick, you don't get sick, you don't get sick, and then you get sick, and they say, oh, well, that's the variant. I mean, I don't think there is a specific test for the variant, is there? How do we know that the vaccine just never worked, and just now you're getting sick? I mean, that would be my question,
that's
right?
A good question.
I mean, if you've got a vaccine that lasts about, what, 6 months, what kind of vaccine? And again, this is not a vaccine, but what kind of vaccine is that?
Right.
And I would just wonder, did it ever really work? And I think we're seeing some evidence that maybe indicates that maybe wasn't even remotely as effective as we thought. Dr. Don, again, to Jacob says, Jacob, you're correct that many are leaving, although she's not positive as to the numbers. And then she says, to claim that the Delta variant is overrunning us, how do they know since there's no test for the variant? Exactly. And which is my question again, how do they know the vaccine ever worked in the first place? Not by that many people seem to think, well, they didn't get as sick, but that's like trying to prove a negative, right? I mean, how do you know? I mean, a lot of people didn't have any symptoms to begin with,
right?
A lot of people didn't get very sick, right? So how do you know whether you didn't get very sick just because you were one of the many people who didn't get very sick, as opposed to the vaccine helped you? So I don't think this FDA approval is going to make life any easier.
From the medical establishment, from the National Health Institute Board or the CDC, they've all been shown to be political, shown to be dishonest, shown to be untrustworthy. And they, you know, it's you build up trust over decades and you can destroy it in a matter of days.
Well, and they keep trying to blame it on Trump supporters, but I understand that.
Yeah,
the main groups not getting the vaccine are people, younger people, and then minority people, right? And who have plenty of good reason not to trust the government. And then young people who are like, we don't get very sick anyway, so we don't need it. They keep trying to blame it on Trump. And Trump himself, because again, I get where he's coming from. He was the one who pushed the vaccine through. So he's like, no, the vaccine is great. Everyone get it. I don't think this is going to help. And I think that all it does, like you said, is underscore the fact that people don't trust our institutions. I have a very liberal friend and we were talking about vaccines. This is after the vaccines and the mask, after the first time when they said we didn't have to wear masks. And she just flat out, she said, I don't know who to believe. She said, you hear so many different things. And she said, and even the people that you've been listening to change their mind from day to day. So she said, I don't know who to believe. And I think that's where a lot of people are anymore, right?
Yeah. Why don't you read one from Jacob? You got the glasses.
Okay. Yeah. We had, Jacob says, I had COVID last October. I still have the antibodies. In May, I got a very bad cold, bronchitis, at least that's what I thought. Maybe last May, I had the Delta variant, no test for antibodies for Delta.
Yeah.
And then Dr. Donna, how do they know the supposed case numbers before were correct? Is the tests were run incorrectly and using the, exactly, I mean, the PC, what do they call them? The tests were used incorrectly. I think, Jacob, you know what they do? Again, it's a psyop, because we had a cold too, right? Now, in any normal year, I'd have just been like, oh, this is an annoying summer cold. And even though I have no idea actually what the Delta variant is, my first thing was, oh, I wonder if I have the Delta variant. Right. And then I'm like, stop it. Stop it. You do not. You do
not.
And even if you do, what is a Delta variant? It's like, you know,
Greek letter.
It's like, give me a break. But that's what they do. They want you to think, well, maybe I had that. Maybe I didn't have bronchitis. Maybe I didn't have strep throat. Maybe I had the Delta variant, even though the test here says strep throat, you know, no, it's insanity. And I think that's a big problem. I mean, I think the past 4 years we've watched the FBI, the CIA, the IRS, the Justice Department, the health industry just lie to us, just flat out lie to us. You know, the media just flat out lie to us, and then they turn around and say, okay, trust us, now we've approved this vaccine.
You know, one of the things that's happening, and as you know, Julie, I love polls. Mm-hmm. Don't trust them necessarily, but love to read them. And, you know, we've got this midterm coming up, which a little over a year away, but it's coming up. And one of the things, if you want to see how the Republicans will do nationally, is a generic poll. And just before 2020, the generic polling was 6.3% for Democrats, which means it was going to be okay for Democrats. It ended up being 3.1, and it wasn't okay for Democrats, and they lost House seats and some other things. Well, the more recent polls on it show no difference between Democrats and Republicans. Yeah. One was 1 point for the Republicans, one was 1 point for the Democrats. But if those numbers hold, you will see the House definitely flip to Republicans, and they certainly could maybe take the Senate.
And let me dig into that a little bit, because we've talked about this. As Chuck mentioned, he's like a poll junkie. Previously, you had said you want to be careful because things weren't as bad for the Democrats. Explain this. You were saying that they were saying, oh, Republicans are always going to win. Oh, I know it. We're always going to win in the midterms because the Democrats in power, it usually flips. But you said that that was not going to be necessarily true.
No, that is what happens during a presidential year. Whoever the winning president is normally carries around a lot of people, so that a normal Republican district would go Democrat in the year that Biden won the election. And vice versa. And then those traditional districts flip back to where they were before at the mid-years. That's why there's always such a huge
back and forth.
Back and forth. Here, the Republicans gain seats. They didn't lose seats. They gained seats. And so there are not a lot of low-hanging fruit for Republicans. There's seven seats that Trump took, that the Democrats won the House seat. Two of the people have already resigned, two more may. But you also have the redistricting, which most of the cases is in the hands of Republicans, not always, but most of the cases. And so just simply from the redistricting, the Republicans might take the House. So if you add the redistricting.
Right, and that's it all up. That's what I was going for.
You
with
all
this.
Add it up, I think it's going to be, it's not inevitable. It's not like the usual one. I don't think they're going to have a 30 or 40.
And not a wave.
Yeah, not a wave. But just because they're not that many. But they only need to take 5 or 6.
And these kind
of take
polls.
10.
Well, and here's the good news, I think, for Republicans. And then we're going to get into Chuck has updates on the Colorado battle for the Republican Party. But I think all of this, the stuff that Biden is doing, are not things he can be easily turned around. Now, Afghanistan, I imagine here in the next few weeks will be settled one way or another. But I think, number one, what's already happened is a lasting bad thing, a bit lasting negative for Biden. I think it could get a heck of a lot worse, and that'll be even worse for Biden. But the economy, because of the policies, like we had Dan Eberhardt on earlier, his, you know, if nothing else, just the energy policies, which he can't go back on and undo because the progressives would slaughter him, right? So that's only going to make things worse. Prices are only going to get worse. Inflation is only going to get worse. Crime, again, you've got, you know, they're still saying, nope, defund the police. That's going to get worse. We're still letting criminals out without any bond requirements. I mean, all of this stuff, parents, kids are back in school wearing masks. Parents are getting more angry over that. You know, at what point are they going to let those kids go? So, I mean, I think all of these problems that we're seeing that are making people like the Republicans more than they did before. What do you think? I don't think you see any of those going away anytime soon. I see them only getting worse.
Yeah, it is going to get worse. I did want to give an update on where our merry band of Republican are doing. We sent a letter out from Randy Corcoran.
Well, back up and explain what you mean.
The Republican Party is dying in Colorado. And it's been dying because the Democrats have been changing the rules for 20 years on everything. And the Republican establishment has always gone along because the Democrats and the Republican establishment fear one thing. That's the average grassroots Republican. So they want to kill that. They certainly have had almost all the national candidates tend to be establishment ones. And so we said, look, the money's flowing in. We've got to go back. So Republicans are nominating because they're nominating almost Democrats.
Well, what happened is under the open primary, one of the rules that the Democrats made is that the primaries in Colorado, if you're unaffiliated, you can vote.
And either Democrat or Republican.
And as a result, what happened, and the Democrats planned this, so that's why it's happened, the Democrats started flooding the Republican primary with dark money that essentially was used to elect Democrat lights. People, when you look at the legislative voting record at the state capitol, vote with the Democrats and against the Republicans. So the establishment.
Carlin Larson and Jeffco and three of them.
Ton of people making a lot of money off of that.
So if we're going to have a choice, and that's all we want to give people is a choice, we've got to make sure we have people who believe in Republican principles. If they believe in the Democratic principles, just stay in the Democratic Party and be happy.
Well, and let me say this. They always say, I mean, some of the people who are opposed to this say, because again, I like to point out, this is the way we did things for decades in Colorado
before,
where you had to be a Republican to vote in a Republican primary. I mean, that doesn't sound that crazy to me. And we won. That's when Republicans were winning,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because it's different.
We changed things, and now Republicans are not winning.
Well, we didn't really change things. All the money from Ken Thierry he's under indictment now. And he came out saying, oh, we love our new, the thing that I pushed.
So this is not some new radical extreme idea, number one. Number two, people say, well, that disenfranchises the unaffiliated voter. It does not. If you're an unaffiliated voter and you want to vote in the Republican primary, like you used to have to do, all you have to do is go to the Secretary of State's office, take like 30 seconds, click affiliate Republican, vote. And then if you want to go back to being unaffiliated, you can do that. Anyone who wants to vote in the Republican primary can. They just have to be a registered Republican.
And it's a practical, you can't disenfranchise somebody who's not in your franchise.
Exactly.
And he says, I don't want to be a Republican, but I want to choose who you get to do, which I wouldn't mind so much if it wasn't for the millions of dollars pouring in from New York City to determine which Democrat-like Republicans we ought to elect. Because in 4 years, you won't even have, it'll just be the Democrat. And then they'll go to a jungle primary and we can officially become a Marxist state.
Well, and so what's happening is you guys have been going around and it's been gaining a lot of momentum. Like you said, Randy Corcoran, writing to about 710 Ken, you guys already knows Randy, wrote a letter. He's the Republican National Committee chairperson.
And we mailed it to the 522 people voting, so it didn't cost us a lot of money. But they went, what? They've been going crazy all over.
Who's
the
been
state.
Going? Who's
the swinos. You know, where'd you get the money? You're kind of like, well, I don't know. I helped contribute, and so did Julie, and so did other people. And so it's they're just going bonkers because let's face it, the grassroots never has any money, never has any organization, never has any wherewithal. And so whenever they pop their head up, the swinos just smack them, whack-a-mole. And this time the whack-a-mole's popped right up and said, here we go, get this.
Here's another letter.
And we've got some more coming out later this week. We're happy to tell you about. It'll be even more fun.
That's right. That's right. And Dr. Donna has a question. Has a bylaw change been considered allowing a simple majority close the primaries as a judge may not find it a ripe issue? This is a complicated thing. We don't want to get too in the weeds. But Dr. Donna, that is essentially a question that goes to the heart of it. Mm. And I think that is some. I mean, what they did when they passed this rule, this ballot initiative, is they said if the Republican Central Committee wants to change the rule is to say that you go back and say you have to be a Republican to vote in the Republican primary. They have to have 75% of them approve it. And if you aren't there that day, your vote is counted as a don't go back.
It's a 90%. It's a 90% vote. So
which is unconstitutional, really.
Yes. And I've got good news there, too. Dr. Eastman and the Claremont Institute have agreed to take on the litigation. What the trouble is, they say, well, why hasn't the Republican Party litigated that, and the Republicans, oh, it would cost too much. Brownstein says it costs $500,000. So we said, great, don't do Brownstein. We'll have the leading constitutional scholar in the country do it, along with the Liberty Think Tank, which is Claremont. So we've got solved your problem. What's your objection now?
And Sandra has a good point, too. The supporting letters, and if you want to read more about this, because it is one of those things, it is crucial. And I know maybe people are like, oh, you're talking about that again, but it's important to talk about
it. We don't talk about it that much compared to the amount I work on it.
Well, exactly. Chuck works constantly. This is how important this is to Chuck, okay? He left the golf course after the sixth hole yesterday to go on a conference call for this. Right, it's like Rev and I were left on our
After
own.
A great drive. After a great drive.
after he was doing okay and he left. So, but it is important because it is literally the future of the party. And you have
the state, too.
Yes, because if the Republicans can't take back some control, then we're doomed. And you have the establishment, you have the consultants who are making money from the Democrat donors, so they don't care, fighting this. And other people are like, well, wait, let's just have Republicans vote in the Republican primary. That seems like a fair enough idea. And you would think, I bet most people, if you asked them, do you think you have to be a Republican, a Democrat, or unaffiliated to vote in the Republican Party? I bet most people would say Republican, right? I mean, it's not a crazy idea. But it's good that John Eastman is getting involved.
Yes, and Claremont Institute is a great liberty-oriented think tank.
And if you want to find out more, Peg Cage is doing a great job. MyColoradoGOP.org. Yes. MyColoradoGOP.org has all of the information up there. You guys are going, there are people speaking at breakfast this morning, at dinners this evening.
We have people going out to Fort Morgan tonight. And so it's everybody's working as hard as they can. And the consultants who see their money train being dried up, they'll start shooting. I mean, we'll need to get in Kabul airport.
Here's Trump, and Jacob is like, Trump must visit Colorado and give a rally. You know, I wish Jacob, we couldn't even get him to come here when he was running for, he did initially, right? But not the second time.
He went to the airport,
but you know, that goes back to part of this thing that it all ties together. One of the reasons he doesn't is there is this conventional psyop that says, oh, Colorado is just a blue state now.
Right.
But you look at things that voters vote on, the initiatives that they vote down, I would submit it's not a blue state.
No, it's not. It is a psyop operation they've done because they're massive ballot harvesting and mule harvesting in Denver. If you're not part of that disgusting display, then Republicans can win. So, you know, as I talked to you, I was glad to hear that Dan Eberhardt agrees. So we've got to get rid of this really rancid ballot harvesting, which takes away the vote from all of them.
Well, as you said, there's a good term for it. It's called ballot muling, where they basically, if you saw, you know, the Project Veritas did some great stuff on this, where they would, you know, they were interviewing people who were going into apartment complex, paying people for their ballots, getting the ballots, filling them out, and then just dropping them off at drop boxes.
Well, that's part of ballot harvesting. Ballot muling is, you know, there are tons of ballots go to these dorms because people,
dorms, apartment buildings.
And so they know when they're going out and they just collect all the ones and they fill them in.
And that's why they need
now to. That's technically illegal. The other one is not illegal. But if you combine the two, you have no chance if you're.
Well, and then you get rid of the requirements, as we said, you have requirements to match signatures, the requirements to verify, does the person live there? Have they voted in some other state? I mean, all of that goes together. So, that's a president, I think. Hey, listen. Sherry, listen, we're running out of time here. Sherry, we'd love to have you call back, but if you could maybe call back on Wednesday, we can take you right off the bat, okay?
Sounds great.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, ma'am. We'll talk to you then. That'll do it for us. We're going to have another guy from Real Clear Politics.
Those guys are great.
Yeah, great. Talking about woke medicine and the danger of woke medicine. He'll join us on Wednesday. And on Friday, we're going to have Dr. Dave Bieri talking about how the European leaders are also thrilled with Biden and his response, and also to talk about inflation. That'll do it for us on a Monday. Thank you to Dan. Thank you to everybody listening. We love having all you guys on Zoom, and thanks to the great guys at PBS.
Take care, everybody. Everybody, and we'll be back Wednesday with, I hope, some really exciting news for you.
Okay.